is Jonathan Fogel, and you are listening to Mac Edition Radio.
This is Harris Fogel at the SIGGRAPH Conference in San Diego. I'm with Chris Ford of Pixar. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Harris. Pleasure to be here.
Chris, you're with the RenderMan division of Pixar, and I'm willing to bet a lot of our listeners have heard of Pixar. They know Pixar backwards and forwards, but they may never have heard of RenderMan. And even if they're programmers or animators, they may have heard of RenderMan in these mythic terms. So let's talk about what RenderMan is, where it came from, and how it relates to the history of Pixar.
Yes, it's a lesser-known fact that Pixar not only is a film studio and an animation studio, as we all know, but actually it also licenses and productizes its technology and makes it available to the broader animation and visual effects industry. And in fact, the RenderMan part of Pixar's business is, in effect, a part of what Pixar originally was when it started. That is, it was a technology company that eventually became a film studio. But the RenderMan business is part of the original Pixar, and it continues to provide solutions to the industry. Now, it's a little known fact, but we track very carefully the number of films that use RenderMan. And, you know, this year, 2007, of all the visual effects movies appearing, about 70%, in fact, a little bit more, use RenderMan. Of animated features which are appearing, over 50% of those use RenderMan. So a very large proportion of the production industry actually relies on Pixar technology to produce its final product.
Now, that would seem counterintuitive to some folks, thinking that a lot of these studios want to keep these techniques secretive to give them that special look. But Pixar, from the very start, has made RenderMan open to the public.
Well, think of RenderMan as an API. And the real value of what a studio builds on top of RenderMan is its own look, its own look development. So Pixar builds tools, shaders, on top of RenderMan that give a certain look and a style to the film they have in production at the time. The same is true for Industrial Light & Magic if they're producing, you know, visual effects, or any of the well-known studios. The real skill for those studios is to build custom looks which are appropriate to the project. And RenderMan is a highly flexible rendering foundation on which to build those tools.
Let's talk about what RenderMan is and the different versions of RenderMan that are out there.
So RenderMan at heart is a core rendering technology. As I said earlier, it's an API in effect. And it runs, which is an application programmer's interface, essentially a tool set that enables a technical director or an artist to assemble together various lighting and shading tools, texture tools, to create a certain look. Now, RenderMan, the API, is essentially known in product terms as RenderMan Pro Server, and it sits on a render farm. So, for example, if you're rendering a visual effects shot, you're going to have maybe 100 render nodes all rendering at night in the background with 100 licenses of RenderMan creating the imagery. But obviously just creating the imagery is one thing. It also helps to be able to create the assets you put through the renderer. So not only do we have the core rendering technology, RenderMan Pro Server, but we also invest a lot of time and effort in what we would call the bridge between RenderMan and a 3D application, which creates models and assets which are fed into the renderer. So we have two bridges to RenderMan. One is called RenderMan Studio, which is a brand new product. We only launched it in the summer of 2007. This will plug straight into Maya. It gives you the capability to essentially translate Maya shaders into RenderMan equivalents. You can build your own custom look, your own custom shaders in the way I described. And is also a tool that contains render farm distribution controls, graphical shader editors, so you can design these things graphically, a whole host of things. That's why we call it RenderMan Studio, because it's a fairly embracing tool. The other bridge I refer to is called RenderMan for Maya. And RenderMan for Maya essentially is the access point to the RenderMan universe. It's the lowest cost, it's the easiest to use, because it's totally embedded inside Maya, and it's really part of the Maya's workflow. In effect, it's Maya-centric, whereas RenderMan Pro Server is more RenderMan-centric. So we provide, essentially, RenderMan solutions both for the entry-level user or the user who doesn't want to get involved in doing any complex look development by writing shaders or writing code, or we have the full-blown classic RenderMan Pro Server with RenderMan Studio as the bridge, which you can use to essentially do anything. It's extremely configurable, and that's always been its power and its appeal to the industry.
But that also requires a much steeper learning curve. You've got to have people dedicated to using RenderMan at that level, right?
Yes, obviously if you're developing custom look masks, custom shaders, you know, having the expertise to do that is key. But we do invest in making graphical tools that make that as easy as possible. In RenderMan Studio, for example, there is a component called Slim. Slim is a graphical shader editor that you can essentially wire a shader graphically on the screen, and it writes out the script file analogs, which are then put into RenderMan. So you don't have to write shader code. But when you get to that level of sophistication, you obviously have a lot of flexibility if you're able to tweak variables and parameters here or there. You do actually touch upon a key area of focus for us this year, which is we really want to demystify RenderMan from a learning and a training aspect. So we actually have invested significantly in what we would call courseware development for this year, essentially a RenderMan training course in a box. The RenderMan courseware, which will be highly production-oriented, you know, it will contain examples of cinematic effects you will have seen in feature films, and it will show you how they're done. This will be available in September, and it will really be, I think, a unique resource in actually showing you how real TDs produce real effects, and yet at the same time explain it in easy and understandable terms that you can apply to your own particular problems and situations.
I also noticed this year that Digital Tutors released a RenderMan training DVD.
Absolutely, yes. There's a difference. The Digital Tutors RenderMan DVD is very much focused on individuals, especially with respect to the RenderMan for Maya product that I mentioned earlier, whereas the RenderMan courseware that we're discussing is as applicable to training institutions or studio training needs. So, you know, it's, for example, the set of tools a tutor might use to deploy in a class context. And we will associate with that a certification so that any institution that acquires these tools and passes the necessary level of certification qualification can say, you know, it's a certified RenderMan training course. You know, we think this actually is pretty important, so we can establish just a baseline for the essential skills you need to be productive with RenderMan in the real commercial world.
I was at the NECC conference recently and interviewed the head of Certiport and the head of Worldwide Education for Adobe. And they are turning to certification because they find that industry wants more reliable indicators that people have mastered a certain level of a certain application.
Yes, and in the RenderMan context, if you think that really to date, RenderMan has been highly concentrated in the areas of production we all know, essentially, you know, Hollywood, LA, also London. You know, these are the big nucleuses of RenderMan, and there you can generally find skilled RenderMan TDs, shader writers, who move between various companies, and you know they move their skills with them in a kind of common wisdom. However, the trend of the industry is we're seeing more and more work being done outside of these nucleuses. We're seeing new studios springing up in Asia, for example. We're seeing them appear in other parts of Europe. And all of them have a need for essentially the types of skills that they can't find locally. You know, they can maybe find, you know, how to push buttons, but it doesn't tell you actually the technique needed to produce a certain type of effect. And it's that type of emphasis in our courseware we really wanted to put a lot of attention on. It's about technique, not just about what button do I hit to, you know, render a frame or something.
And this becomes increasingly important as we see the move toward more offshore use of studios, right?
Absolutely, yes. You know, and that is something that we do notice. Not only us, I mean, you know, everyone in the software industry, even, you know, in the computer graphics industry, notices this trend. We're seeing a significant amount of investment occurring, definitely in parts of Asia. For example, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, you may not know, but that was produced by Imagi, a company in Hong Kong. There was no one doing computer animated features in Hong Kong 5 years ago. And yet, there it is. We are seeing signs of new studios setting up in India, in Malaysia, in Australia. And all of them have a hunger for this type of knowledge. And, of course, they try to acquire it by acquiring TDs with the skills out of the traditional production centers. But none of this is a substitute for establishing a baseline of skills that anyone who's setting up with RenderMan knows, that anyone who's attended training and has that necessary certification, you know, actually can offer the right level of expertise to be productive.
And a lot of folks might look at these large productions and think these studios and these visual effects houses must have more money than they know what to do with. But the reality is it's quite a tight business, right?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, visual effects is a very competitive industry. You know, many of the studios are in a constant competitive situation in bidding for jobs, and margins can be very slim. you know, most studios in visual effects will usually expand as projects come in, and they will shrink in terms of personnel as those projects are finished. They need to manage the budgets very, very closely. And, you know, you look at the credits at the end of a typical visual effects film, you often see like five or six companies involved because the work has to be farmed out or not every studio has the capacity. It can be a very competitive business.
So does that mean that animators and visual effects supervisors need to be very fast on their feet because they may be moving from company to company and project to project?
I think the answer to that is yes. And what's very interesting is it appears increasingly they not only need to be fast on their feet, they need to be prepared to move large distances. And when I say large distances, I mean globally. You know, there are many cases of animators and TDs who have been working in Australia or New Zealand, and then they appear in London, and then they appear in LA. It truly is an international business now.
So much for the stable family life, huh?
That actually is one of the most difficult aspects for anyone who has a family, yes. You know, the hours can be long in visual effects. Remember that visual effects projects generally are on a far tighter deadline than many animated features that, if not leisurely, at least, you know, are planned out over a, you know, a longer production timescale, often running 2-3 years, for example. So, you know, they can be planned more effectively, and an individual with a family can plan their life around that. Unfortunately, with visual effects, life can be a lot more uncertain.
And visual effects keeps growing in the industry, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And not only is it growing in terms of the number of films using visual effects, but the number of shots in any one film. You know, whereas a few years ago, seeing a few hundred visual effects shots was a huge deal. You know, now we see thousands of visual effects shots. You only got to look at, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean or Spider-Man. You know, these are just incredible visual effects films. You know, 300 was a good example of, you know, almost a totally visual effects movie. You know, virtually most of it shot indoors, or all of it.
Let's talk about shaders. So for our listeners that are saying, well, they keep mentioning shaders. What's a shader exactly?
Shader is a distinct surface treatment that you can apply to a three-dimensional object. So a classic case would be skin. You know, just take a look at skin. What does it look like? You know, it obviously has color, but it not only has color, it actually has a kind of a rough texture. You know, it has the pores, it has the hair follicles. And then the way light bounces off the skin is quite distinct. You know, light kind of not only bounces off the surface, but kind of underneath in an effect known as subsurface scattering. All of these elements combine together to make the appearance of that thing we call skin. And the assembly of essentially code to do that is called a shader. RenderMan has a shading language called RenderMan Shading Language, RSL. And essentially, a skilled TD can build any type of shader out of basic primitive components to produce complex surfaces. Perhaps another example might be a rusty car body, for example. You know, you're going to see the paint, you're going to see some holes in there, you're going to see rust and corrosion, often made of different layers of images and textures, but combined in such a way that the final result, when applied to the three-dimensional object, looks really realistic. So there's a lot of skill in writing shaders. And it can either be done by literally writing shader language by hand in a script editor, which is the time-honored way of doing it, but there are easy ways of doing it. You can also use a shader tool or a shader editor. We have one called Slim inside of RenderMan Studio, which can do things graphically. You know, essentially, it's a kind of a process tree, much like you may be familiar with in compositing applications, where you're wiring together various nodes, and you know, you can traverse to the end, and you can see the effect of all of these nodes combined together.
We've been discussing RenderMan working in conjunction with Maya. Maya, of course, ships with its well-known application, MentalRay. Why would an artist or an animator or visual effects supervisor choose to use RenderMan as opposed to MentalRay?
It depends primarily on what it is you want to do. RenderMan is, you know, unapologetically focused on feature film rendering. We have a singular focus. And our focus is making pixels look perfect when projected on a screen 40 feet across. And that's our prime mandate. You know, RenderMan comes out of a working production studio and is developed to the demands of working production studios. So our focus is a little different from Mental Images, who are a more broadly based solution. MentalRay is a very powerful rendering solution, and it's a more general solution because in products like XSI and in products like Maya, it's obviously servicing the needs of not only TV and film and broadcast, but also visualization and games. So it's one really of a matter of development focus, I would say. But all renderers have their strong points and they have their weak points. You know, RenderMan is no exception to that. It's just that our focus and our concentration of strong points is very much on the film space.
So with this emphasis on education and getting people up to speed at a profound level and a deep level with the program, how should somebody who's in, say, the higher ed sphere start to approach RenderMan? What's appropriate for them to work with?
Most importantly is you need to have a good sense of composition, of light, of design, of what makes a well-balanced and, you know, pleasurable image to view. There's no substitute for being able to interpret your aesthetic sense of how things should end up and combine it with your skill in using the tools in RenderMan to create that image. We can provide training materials, such as a courseware, that will enable you to produce certain effects. But in the end, it's going to be your creative and aesthetic judgment that is going to render, if you excuse the phrase, a great-looking image.
And Pixar's been very supportive of education. I know at our university, we teach RenderMan, and many universities throughout the country are supported and given a lot of support from Pixar to get people up to speed on it. Are you finding that the integration with Maya makes that pathway a little smoother?
Absolutely. I mean, Maya is a standard in the industry. You know, it is the most common 3D application at the moment, and we integrate very tightly with Maya, and we have always had a very close working relationship with Alias and, of course, now Autodesk, with respect to RenderMan and the markets that we serve. So it's a very well-tested and a very well-tried combination.
At the user group meeting that you held at SIGGRAPH, you introduced the new version of RenderMan and some new improvements, as well as you made a great little joke about what might happen to the visual effects industry if something happened to this room, right?
Well, in the RenderMan user group, of course, we have all the superstars of the rendering TD community. So essentially the people who are responsible for the effects in pretty much every movie we've ever seen are all there in one room. That is a combination of brains that quite simply is almost unprecedented. And only at somewhere like SIGGRAPH could you see such a concentration of skill and talent. It's really quite a privilege to even address such a group of people, you know, who really just push the software way beyond what we think it can do every day.
So Chris, let's talk about some of the new releases of RenderMan and some of the new products.
Well, this year at SIGGRAPH, we are launching RenderMan Pro Server, which is our core rendering, you know, server product, is the API, version 13.5. The key new features there are multi-camera or stereoscopic rendering. You may be aware of the fact that many directors are very interested in doing 3D films, and we obviously have to have the capability to render those. So we have put in features to make very efficient 3D rendering possible. And I say efficient, I don't think you have to render each frame twice, you know, one for the left and one for the right eye. You can reuse a lot of the assets. So in fact, the delta is only like an extra 15%, 20% at most on top of what it would just take to render one frame. So that's a very significant feature for a lot of 3D films you're going to see appearing in the next few years. We're also increasingly optimizing RenderMan to run on the multi-core machines that are increasingly common. So RenderMan is now highly threaded. You can, for example, render one frame on four processors by threading to each of those processors, or maybe two frames on two processors with two threads each. There are various combinations of threads and cores and processors you can tie together. But we've done a lot of work on that in the latest version. And we've also done significant numbers of additions to the scripting language. So you can essentially produce more sophisticated effects by customizing the code for your own specific looks.
And from what I witnessed at the user group, there were significant changes to RSL to make it much more amenable to folks.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, RSL is a long-standing standard in the industry, and it's been around for a long time, and we felt that it was about time that we added some additional new features and functions to reflect, you know, the increasing visual complexity of what people are trying to achieve with it.
And, of course, Ratatouille is doing fantastic at the box office, right?
It's doing amazing. Yeah, Ratatouille is an incredible experience for us at Pixar, not only in the technology sense for as far as RenderMan is concerned, but as a creative piece of art in its own right. I hope that all of you who have seen the film will enjoy the sheer visual density of the rendering. You know, you look at some of those kitchen shots and they contain a huge amount of detail, which is truly unprecedented. Just an interesting factoid for everyone. Cars, our last movie, took approximately 350 times more rendering cycles than Toy Story, which was about 10 years before. So for every one frame rendered in Toy Story, Cars required about a 350-fold increase in compute capacity. With Ratatouille, that number actually ramped up to about 450. So if you were to calculate backwards the amount of rendering, when you need to start rendering, if we had had the rendering capacity of Toy Story and we had applied that to Ratatouille, we'd probably have started rendering around about the time of Tutankhamun.
Chris, what's your personal history with RenderMan and Pixar? How did you get into the world of render farms and render nodes and shaders?
Well, my background, like many people in this industry, is actually in production. I started out as an animator, TD, many years ago, I must admit. And in my own personal evolution, I came to the stage when I realized that the actual means by which you produce effects was actually, personally, more stimulating to me than actually doing the work from a creative point of view. In other words, there's another way to express your creativity, and that is in technique and how you produce effects. So I moved from production to the software development side of the CG business. I was the senior product manager for Maya, right from version 1 all the way to version 4.5. So I was very heavily involved with the early growth and development of Maya. Then I was also the director of product management for all of the 3D products at Discrete, including Max more recently. And then I moved to Pixar to take on RenderMan. So my history certainly in more recent times has been involved with the development and evolution of the tools that enable artists and TDs to be truly creative and express themselves. And for me personally, my greatest satisfaction is still a great cheat, you know, a cool way around some really gnarly problem. And, you know, embodying those types of cheats, those types of workflows as actual methodologies in the software essentially is what we do. But I will say one thing, that if you have worked in production, you always retain with you a sense of what matters. You know, I definitely am not so close to the day-to-day hammering of every widget and feature in the software as someone who's doing it on a day-to-day basis, but you never lose the fact of what really matters, especially when you spent a few nights sleeping under your desk and waiting for something to render.
RenderMan's been OS X native for some time, right?
Absolutely, yes. All of our products run on Mac OS X. It's one of the three standard operating systems we support, along with Linux and Windows, of course.
And the current version's Intel native, right?
We will be able to run on Intel Max, yes.
Chris, where can our listeners find out more information about RenderMan and Pixar?
Easy. Just visit the Pixar website at www.pixar.com, and you'll find a RenderMan tab right at the top of the website. Just go in there. You'll find everything you need to know about RenderMan, its users, how it's used in various case studies, testimonials. It's all there. Have fun.
I want to thank Chris Ford, the business director for RenderMan at Pixar, for spending time with us today. It's been a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me too, Harris. Thank you.
For Mac Edition Radio, this is Harris Ford. You've been listening to Mac Edition Radio. The contents are copyright 2007 and cannot be reproduced without written consent.